Meditation Center, San Jose, California, Special Retreat of November 1998.
Retreat. And although many of you, or all of you, are familiar with this practice, I will explain to you this practice again, the practice of the foundations of mindfulness. It's called Satipatthana meditation in Pali. So talking about such practices, it is always good to go back to the original language or original words and try to understand the meaning following the explanations given in those ancient commentaries. Now the Satipatthana is translated as the foundations of mindfulness in English, or some translated as setting up of mindfulness or established mindfulness, and so there are many translations. Even the word foundation is a convenient translation for the word Satipatthana. Still, we don't really know what the foundation of mindfulness is. So in order to understand the real meaning of these words, we have to go back to the original. The word Satipatthana is a compound word. In Pali, there are many words that are compounded. And so in order to understand the compound word, we must break it down into its components. So here, there are first two words joined together, sati and patthana. And we have to understand the meaning of each word separately, and then the meaning of the whole compound. So first, we will try to understand the word or the meaning of the word sati, and then the satipatthana. Now the word sati is translated as mindfulness. Again, I don't quite know what mindfulness is, what it means in English. What I understand is it is the translation of the Pali word sati. And since I know the meaning of the word Pali word sati, I take for granted that mindfulness means the same thing, but I'm not sure. In the ancient commentaries, three definitions of the word sati are given. First, sati is defined as a mental state that remembers. Now, the second definition is that sati is a mental state by the help of which the concomitants remember. And the third definition is sati is just remembering. So there are three kinds of definitions. You may have noticed that the first definition is by way of an agent, something or someone that does. And the second definition is by way of an instrument. And the third is by way of its intrinsic nature. Now, we Buddhists are maybe haunted by the idea of Atman. We always want to reject the idea of Atman anywhere or everywhere. So here also, in order to reject the idea of Atman, the ancient commentators explained these words in these three ways, by way of an agent, by way of an instrument, and by way of its intrinsic nature. During the time of the Buddha, who believed that when we remember something, it is not us that remember, but the Atman. So there is an Atman, and it is the Atman that remembers, and not us, not the individual. So in order to reject that notion, the first definition is given. Now, the first definition is given as sati is something that remembers. So what remembers is not the Atman, but the sati, a mental state. Some others who believed that, say, when we remember, but we remember with the help of something, with the help of the Atman. So without the Atman, we cannot remember. So Atman is like an instrument. So when we want to cut a tree, we need a saw. Without a saw, we cannot cut the tree. So the saw is instrumental in cutting the tree. So similarly, Atman is instrumental in people remembering things. So in order to reject that idea, the second definition is given. It is not with the help of Atman that we remember, but it is with the help of this mental state, sati, that we remember. Putting aside those refutations, when we want to define a state to show its true nature, then we use the third definition. The ancient commentators used the third definition. So, in fact, in reality, the sati is not that not that which remembers, or not that which is instrumental in remembering, but sati is just the act of remembering. It is just remembering, nothing else. So this is the definition by way of its intrinsic nature. Let us understand that sati is remembering. Now here, remembering means both remembering what one did in the past, what one said in the past, as well as the full awareness of the present object. So both are called remembering. When we remember something we did in the past, it is sati. When we remember something we said in the past, it is sati. And when we are aware of the object at the present moment, like when you practice meditation, it is also sati. When commentators explain these terms or these states, they explain them with reference to four aspects. Now, they explain a certain state by way of characteristic, function, and mode of manifestation, and proximate cause. Now, characteristic means the distinguishing feature of that particular state. Some distinguishing feature by which we understand that it is it. To any other state. Now, the characteristic of sati is described as not floating on the surface. So if it must be sati, it must not float on the surface. That means it must not be superficial. It must go deep into the object. So when we practice sati, when we practice Satipatthana meditation, our sati must not be floating on the surface. So it must go deep into the object. It is explained that it is not like a kind of fruit, a gourd or a squash that floats on the surface. So it must go, it must sink into the object, it must go deep into the object. So that is the characteristic of sati. Then its function. So what is its function? What does it do? Its function is described as not forgetting or not losing the object. So once there is sati, then it takes the object firmly so that it does not lose the object. And when you concentrate on the sati itself, then it will appear to you, or it will manifest itself to you, to your mind, as a guard. That means when sati is standing guard at the doors of the eyes, ears, and so on, no unwholesome mental states can enter your mind. So when there is a guard at the door, no undesirable people can go in. So in the same way, when sati is guarding at the doors of eyes and so on, no unwholesome mental states can go in. And so when you concentrate on sati itself, it shows itself to you as a guard or something that is guarding the doors of eyes and so on. To understand this mode of manifestation of sati, we can easily accept that the practice of sati is the only way for the purification of mind. To practice mindfulness meditation, it is self-evident. Now you try to be mindful of the breaths or the movements of the abdomen, and so long as there is mindfulness, there are no mental defilements in your mind. Once you lose mindfulness, these mental defilements come in. So you see that the mindfulness, the practice of mindfulness, is the only way for purify your mind or to keep your mind from being contaminated by mental defilements. Mode of manifestation given in the commentaries is coming face to face with the object. So when there is sati, you do not lose the object, and so it is like looking the object face to face. Actually, it is not just coming face to face with object, but actually hitting the object. And the proximate cause of sati is given as strong perception, or the object of satipatthana, or the satipatthana itself. Now the first one, strong perception. Now perception means a mental state that makes marks of an object. Now whenever we experience an object, whether we see an object or we hear an object and so on, there is a mental state that arises in our mind and that makes a mark of that object. That is why when we experience that object later, or when we recall that object later, we recognize it. So that mental state is called sanya in Pali, and it is translated as perception. When you want to remember something, then you must make a note of it. And if your noting is strong, then you will not forget it. You will remember it. So that strong sanya, or strong perception, is a proximate cause for sati, which is remembering. I think that has more to do with remembering the strong perception. So another proximate cause is given, and that is the objects of the four satipatthanas. Now there are four satipatthanas, and I'll explain to you them to you later. And they are satipatthana on the body, on feelings, on consciousness, and on dhamma objects. So these objects are also said to be the proximate cause of sati, simply because sati cannot arise without these objects. So these objects are said to be proximate cause. That means not producing cause, but something like a condition for the sati to arise. The sub-commentary further explains that sati itself is proximate cause of another sati. Now, you practice sati, you practice mindfulness, and the previous mindfulness is a condition for a succeeding mindfulness. So, sati itself is a proximate cause of another sati. So, according to this definition, the proximate cause of sati is also sati. I hope you understand sati fairly well now. Now there is another word, patthana, which is the second part of the word satipatthana. Now again, this word patthana is composed of a root and a prefix and a suffix. Now Pali words are divided into roots, and then there are some prefixes, and also there are some suffixes. Most nouns are formed in this way. So here patthana has three parts, pa and tha, and let's say na. Now pa is a prefix, and tha is the root, and na, or really anna, is the suffix. So first, we try to find out what is the meaning of the root tha. So the meaning of the root tha is to stand. To stand means to exist or to be, not the real standing. So it's like the building stands on the land. That means it is situated, or it is fixed on the land. So in the same way, when we say something with ta, we mean it exists, or it is. Now the third part, na or anna, means an agent. So thana means something that stands, something that exists, something that is. And the prefix pa has many meanings. And here it means to rush into, rushing towards. So pa signifies rushing towards with force. So patthana means something that rushes towards the object forcefully, and that stays on the object. When it rushes to the object and stays on it, it takes the whole of the object, it takes the entirety of the object, not just on one part of the object. So it, we can say it covers the whole range of the object. So that is what we mean by patthana.
You're right.
These two words, we get the word satipatthana. So that means sati, say, which rushes to the object, which takes the entirety of the object and stays on it. So that means sati already is a firm awareness of intense awareness of the object. When it is qualified by the word patthana, it means more intense awareness of the object. So by the word satipatthana, we mean sati which is strong and which is well established on the object. So when we practice satipatthana, our sati must be like that. So it must not be superficial. It must go deep into the object, and it must stay on the object, taking the entirety of the object. That is why I always say, pay close attention, pay close attention. And there are four kinds of satipatthana taught by the Buddha. So you may have read that sutta, or you may have heard about the sutta and the discourse where these four satipatthanas are explained in some detail. So according to that teaching, to that discourse, there are four kinds of satipatthanas. They are firmly established sati on the body, on feelings, on consciousness, and on Dhamma objects. Mainly called contemplation of the body, of feelings, and so on. Now here, a body means something that has to do with the physical body. And the contemplation of the body is taught in different ways in that discourse. Actually, there are 14 kinds of contemplation on the body taught in that discourse. These 14 kinds of contemplation of the body, we practice here at the retreat about 3 or 4. Now, when you try to be mindful of the breathings, in-breaths and out-breaths, then you are doing one kind of contemplation of the body. And when you are practicing walking meditation, or when you are aware of sitting, standing, and so on, you are doing another kind of body contemplation. And when you are aware of the small activities, you are doing another kind of body contemplation. And sometimes you may be aware of the four basic material elements, the element of earth, element of water, element of fire, and element of air. So sometimes, at some moments, you may be aware of one of these four basic elements. So in that case, you are doing another kind of the contemplation of the body. So at the retreat, you may be doing one of these four kinds of contemplation of the body. Now, with regard to this first satipatthana, which is called kaya nupassana satipatthana, we must understand the meaning of the word kaya. Normally, kaya means the body. But sometimes it means a group. Because the body is a group of smaller parts or smaller organs. So sometimes kaya means a group, not the whole physical body. Now, when you practice mindfulness of breathing, you are doing the mindfulness of body meditation. But here, mindfulness of body does not mean mindfulness of the whole body. Mindfulness of the body of breathing, or simply mindfulness of the breathing. So, we must understand this, that the word body does not mean the whole body in this context, but a group of something. So, with regard to the breathing, the group of in-breath and out-breath, and with regard to the other postures, the group of postures, and so on. When you are being mindful of the breath, when you are noting the breath, you are doing the contemplation of on the body, and when you are aware of the movements of the abdomen rising and falling, you are doing the body contemplation. Now, when you are practicing walking meditation, noting, lifting, moving, and so on, you are doing the body contemplation. When you are aware of the feelings, then you are doing the second satipatthana, the contemplation of feelings. Now, with regard to feeling, we must understand that it is a mental state. Actually, it is not a physical thing. Feeling is a mental state. But with some sensations in the body, that we talk about them without distinction. Suppose you have pain, and you are aware of that pain. That means you are aware of the feeling of that pain. You experience that pain and you are aware of that experience. So when you are aware of that experience of pain as pain, then you are doing the feeling contemplation. So actually what you concentrate on is not the pain itself in the body, but the experience of that pain, or we call it the feeling of that pain. And that feeling is actually a mental state that arises in the mind. Three kinds of feelings: pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. So whether it is pleasant or unpleasant or neutral, we must be aware of that feeling, not only unpleasant feeling, because when we practice or when we give instructions, we emphasize on the painful feelings, unpleasant feelings, but actually pleasant feelings are also the object of meditation, and you must make notes of the pleasant feelings when they are there, because if you do not make the if you do not note the pleasant feelings, then you may become attached to those feelings, and so the you lose mindfulness and mental defilements come in. And feeling is not connected with physical body only. It can arise in your mind independent of the physical body. So when you are sorry or when you are happy, then there is this feeling of sorrow or feeling of happiness. And that is also the object of Vipassana meditation. So basically, we talk about three kinds of feelings: pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. Actually, pleasant feeling can be connected with the body, or it connected with mind. So there are two kinds of pleasant feeling, and also two kinds of unpleasant feeling. So all in all, there are five kinds of feelings: two pleasant, two unpleasant, and one neutral. So there is always neutral. I mean, neutral is always mental and not physical. Now, the third satipatthana is conveniently called contemplation of mind. Actually, it is the contemplation of the consciousness or mindfulness of the consciousness. Now, in the teachings of the Buddha or in Abhidhamma, what we call mind is a combination of two things. Consciousness or pure awareness of the object and mental states. So mind is a composite of these two parts, consciousness on the one hand and mental states or mental factors on the other. So when we say mind, or in Pali, nama, we mean both consciousness and mental factors. But when we say citta in Pali, then we mean consciousness only and not the mental factors. And the third, Tetsadibhatana, is called citta nupassana, not nama nupassana. But to translate it as contemplation on consciousness may be a little awkward. So they use the word mind for that, the third satipatthana. And for clear understanding, I must say something about the word consciousness. Now I told you that the word citta is translated as consciousness, and that is not an adequate translation. But people do not find a better word for the word citta, and so they translate it as consciousness. Now citta is defined as the awareness of the object. But here awareness is not like awareness in the practice of meditation. It is a mere awareness, just pure awareness of the object. And that is called citta. And that citta is always with us, whether we are awake or whether we are asleep or whether we have fainted or whether we are unconscious. Citta is always with us. We are never without citta through life. So to translate citta as consciousness may be a little inadequate, because when you are asleep or when you are unconscious, it means you have no consciousness. you are not conscious of anything. But still, according to Abhidhamma, the mind has an object, an obscure object at that time. So mind must always have, mind means citta. Citta must have always have an object. Sometimes the object is a vivid object, and at other times it is an obscure object. So when we are fast asleep or when we have fainted, then the object is an obscure object. But object there must be. And so to translate citta as consciousness is also not adequate, but we cannot find any other word or any better word for it. So we have to be satisfied with this translation, consciousness for the word citta. So when we want to talk about Abhidhamma, although we may use the word consciousness, we must understand this according to the teachings of Abhidhamma. Say we use the word consciousness, but it is in the Buddhist sense or in the Abhidhamma sense, and not as it is understood outside. When do we practice contemplation of consciousness? Most obviously, when we are mindful of our wandering mind. So you try to be mindful of the breath or movements of the abdomen, and then your mind goes to some other object and you are aware of it, and you say going out, wandering. So then at that time you are practicing the contemplation of consciousness. And when you are angry, and then you make notes as angry, 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 and then you are doing the contemplation on consciousness. So you are angry means your mind is associated with anger. So when you say angry, 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 then you are doing the contemplation on consciousness. But when you are saying anger, 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 concentrating on anger itself, you are doing the fourth satipatthana, not the third. So there is a very thin line between the contemplation on consciousness and contemplation on Dhamma objects. We come to the fourth satipatthana, which is Dhamma Nupassana. Now, the word Dhamma is a very difficult word. It can mean anything. And it means different things in different contexts. So we cannot translate this word with just one English word. In this context, we cannot translate the word Dhamma. So it is better to keep it untranslated and say Dhamma objects, rather than translate it inadequately. So many people translate it as mind object or mental objects. What is mental object? Object of mind, or the object which is mind. Whether you mean object of mind or mind that is object, you are not translating the word properly. So there is no word to cover the range of the objects that is covered by the word Dhamma. So it is better to keep it untranslated and say Dhamma object. Now, what are the Dhamma objects? So if you want to know what Dhamma represents in this context, you have to read the sutta, I mean the discourse. So on the section on the fourth contemplation, Dhamma Nupassana, Buddha mentioned the five mental hindrances. So they are mental states like desire, anger or hate, and so on. And then Buddha mentioned the five aggregates of clinging. And then Buddha described the six internal and six external bases. Next, Buddha mentioned the seven factors of enlightenment. And last, the four noble truths. So all these are called Dhamma in this context. Anger is one of the five mental hindrances. And anger can accompany a consciousness. So when you are making notes as angry, 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 that means you mean that you have the mind or consciousness that is accompanied by anger. But when you concentrate on anger itself and say anger, 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 then you are doing the fourth satipatthana, the contemplation on Dhamma objects. So that is the difference between the third contemplation and the fourth contemplation in some cases. So the fourth contemplation, the contemplation on Dhamma objects, is very wide, and actually the other contemplations can be included in the fourth also. But when you are making notes as anger, then you are doing this fourth contemplation. And when you are making notes as angry, then you are doing the third contemplation. But when you are practicing, do not try to find out what contemplation you are doing. So distinguishing these contemplations is just for understanding. But in actual practice, you are not to try to find out which contemplation you are doing. If you do so, you will be taken off the track and you will not be meditating. You will be out of meditation. So when you are practicing, don't worry about what contemplation you are doing at the moment. What is important is to be mindful of the object at the present moment, not to think about it and not to speculate on it, but just to take it as it is. Now you are familiar with four satipatthanas, or four kinds of contemplation of the body, feeling, consciousness, and Dhamma objects. Now in the discourse, the contemplation of body comes first, and then second of feelings, and third of consciousness, and the fourth of Dhamma objects. But it does not mean that you are to practice them one by one in that order, because there are two kinds of orders: the order of teaching and the order of practice. So in practice, you do not follow that order. Whatever is there is the object of your meditation, and so you have to be mindful of it. So you do not follow this order, or you do not practice contemplation of the body first, and then you go to the contemplation of feelings and so on. You practice these four kinds of contemplations at random when you practice meditation. So you are trying to be mindful of the movements of the abdomen. So you are doing the contemplation of the body. Then your mind goes out. So you are aware of its going out. Now you are doing the third contemplation of consciousness. And then you have a painful feeling somewhere. And so you try to be mindful of that painful feeling. And so you are doing the second contemplation. And suppose you are upset, and then you try to concentrate on the anger itself, then you are doing the fourth contemplation. So you practice these four satipatthanas at random, as they are presented to you through the six sense doors. So you have no choice. Whatever is there at the present moment is the object of your meditation, and you must be mindful of that object. So if you are not mindful of that object, then the mental defilement can become latent in that object. And Vipassana tries to avoid that latency of mental defilements in objects. Now every morning we read the opening passage from the discourse on the Satipatthana. And I made you read this passage every day so that you are reminded of these four contemplations, or four foundations of mindfulness. So tomorrow, I hope when you read it again, you will read it with a true understanding of the passage. When you read, he dwells contemplating Dhamma objects on Dhamma objects, then you understand, oh, these Dhamma objects means the five mental hindrances and so on. Do you remember the first sentence in that passage?
Quý vị có nhớ được cái câu đầu tiên của cái phần đầu của bản kinh không?
This is the only way for the purification of beings, for the overcoming of sorrow and lamentation, for the disappearance of pain and grief, for reaching the noble path, and for the realization of Nibbana, and namely the four foundations of mindfulness. So these four satipatthanas, or the practice of these four satipatthanas, can lead us to total purification of mind and so on. So Buddha mentioned the benefits we will get from this practice at the very beginning of this discourse. The four foundations of mindfulness, so that we are able to get the results promised by the Buddha. Thank you.